And it was just such a whimper. I can deal with losing, but losing that like that, and particularly to Arsenal, it definitely has taken a bit of the shine off the team.
I think FIFA are in a difficult position in terms of punishment because they've had such a lax attitude to punishment for things that are far more serious crimes than wearing a poppy.
I think the culture that he's currently instilled in that side is one where it's okay to lose.
I read something today that said Wolves have scored more goals against the Premier League top six than Man United have.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and I'm joined by a panel of fantastic, amazing, brilliant football fans on the panel this week. Yeah, man, top notch this week, starting with G. How you doing, my friend?
I'm really good, man.
It's been a while, man.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been traveling about a bit.
I see.
But I'm happy to be back, man. Yesterday I was at the NFL as well.
Okay, what was that saying?
And I saw, really good atmosphere. First time ever going. And I think for the first half an hour, I was kind of following it quite well. I think it goes on a bit too long.
Like an hour too long.
Like every American sport.
Like 2 hours too long. But they really did make a show of it. I think maybe football could learn a few things in terms of the spectacle and atmosphere, yeah. And obviously the whole thing with the protest as well was a bit emotional.
Just
as well,
briefly, so. how did that go down and what actually happened?
Well,
we know what happened, but
half of the team on both sides kind of did something. Mm. I think a lot of the crowd at Wembley were quite oblivious. I don't think they totally realised. I was personally looking out for it because I'd heard what Trump has said. I don't think it took away from the atmosphere. I think the players were all kind of up for it after. But yeah, it was. I'm hoping that it's a part of change in that sport.
Yeah.
So I think it could be a historic moment.
Okay. All right. We'll see. I'm also joined on the panel this week by man like Troy, returnee. How you been?
Yeah, not too bad. Well? Delighted to be back.
Thanks for coming back.
Feel like it's going to be a real hot one tonight.
I think it's going to be fire tonight. Yeah.
But all good. Yeah, all good.
Good. Good to have you back on the pod anyway. And another returnee, Warren. What are you saying, man?
Jordan, how are you, my bro?
I'm very, very good, sir. Very good. How are you?
Very well. Looking forward to having an interesting debate, chewing over the fat of what's been going on in the world of football over the last 7 days. It should
indeed,
be good
indeed, and yeah. we love it. Gents, thank you very much for coming on the pod this week. Just before we get into the drive-bys, a reminder, if you haven't already subscribed to the pod, please do so on iTunes, Football Fans Podcast. If you have 2 minutes, we'd appreciate a review and a like. It helps us get up the charts. We go, we get seen by more people, and more people like yourselves enjoy the podcast. It takes 2 minutes. Just head to the Football Fans Podcast page and there's a tab that says, I think it's rate and review, so we would appreciate it if you could do that. And obviously we're on Twitter, FFP_11, and we're now on Instagram, Football Fans Podcast, and the same for Facebook. Right, let's get now into some quick drive-bys. You know the rules now, guys. I'll ask each of you a question. You have a minute to answer that question, and you cannot be interrupted by anyone else on the panel while Warren splats a fly in my studio.
It's not my flat.
Let's start with Gabriel.
Yep.
If he appears tonight in the West Brom Arsenal match, he will break the Premier League record for appearances, 633 appearances, one title, one FA Cup, 53 England caps, 36 years old. Does Gareth Barry deserve some respect on his name from football fans?
I think anyone who's had that type of longevity deserves respect for that longevity, but let's not take it too far. I think overall he was a pretty mediocre player. I think my lasting memory of Barry is always going to be as it was said, the hare and the tortoise in Germany, where he was just getting breezed out by the German players.
So in Germany, yeah.
So I just don't think he's a great player. I think I would actually prefer that Giggs kept the record, because I'd say Giggs is a truly great player and a truly great athlete. But obviously he's been a good athlete, a good pro over a period of time. So respect for him, but let's not take it too far.
I've heard some hyperbole this week about Gareth Barry as well, I must admit, and I agree. Good player, but let's calm down. And technically he's actually not beaten Giggs' record in the top flight. It's a Premier League record. So okay. Giggs actually has, I think, 15 more appearances in the top division over...
What? Hang on a minute. Let's be clear here. my friend, you're going to overlook Gareth Barry winning the Premier League and the FA Cup and potentially being the greatest, having the greatest amount of appearances in the Premier League, for him being outrun by Mesut Ozil and three other German players in the World Cup. Come on, man.
That's his memory, isn't it?
But overall,
that's a bit of respect for a man who's with such longevity in the Premier League. Come on, bro.
I respect his longevity, but he's an average player. A bang average player as well.
Fair enough, fair enough.
I always thought I was a bang average player and I made absolutely zero appearances. So if he's bang average and has made 600 plus, he's got to be going somewhere.
Fair enough, fair enough. G's question. So G's,
yeah, yeah, I was interrupted.
G's answers are not the only one that matters.
I can't believe what I was hearing.
Let's come to you, Troy. Brendan Rodgers,
yeah.
Do you think that the success that he's having in Scotland with Celtic is in any way enhancing his managerial career and reputation?
I think you've got to say that it is enhancing it. I think it's you know, everyone's going to disrespect the Scottish level of football and what they're playing against. But ultimately, he can only put out a team and play in a style and manner. You know, will he get another big job? I think anyone with a record that he's got at the moment will possibly do that.
Is the record that he's now got at Celtic helping him any more than it would have, say, 2 years ago to get a big job?
Put it this way, he got sacked at Liverpool and the man that's taken his place has got the same record and has still got a job in the Premier League. So I think he's Premier League worthy.
Top six club Premier League worthy?
You didn't ask that. First of all, you asked if it's... I think he's Premier League worthy. I don't see that the top six would employ someone like Brendan Rodgers again, but I do see clubs in that second stage of clubs that are fighting for the seventh place almost, that he could do a job at a number of clubs there.
So just briefly,
would have taken him.
Would those clubs more so want him now because of what he's done?
I think his reputation is still there. I don't think it's been damaged. When he goes and pits his wits in the Champions League, then we'll see the quality of the man. Let's be honest, he's playing Rangers once every so often and they've got the mark on Rangers now. Aberdeens, Hibernians, he's not really being extended, but he's still got to produce a team that plays and wins in a certain style. So let's judge him on you know, the continued record in the Scottish League, but let's also judge him on what he's doing in the Champions League with Celtic as well. But there's a Premier League club for him, or I believe anyway.
Okay. Warren, who is in desperate need more of a trophy this year out of Klopp and Pochettino?
I wanted that question.
Oh, you did.
Gosh.
Who do you think needs a trophy more this year?
I would say Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah? Why so?
I think you hear some murmurings among certain Liverpool fans and there's a feeling of Emperor's New Clothes with Jurgen Klopp at the moment. I think when he came in, he was his breath of fresh air, standing, snarling in the technical area, thinking, almost frightening his players into actually running through brick walls for him. But you can work hard, you can run through brick walls, you can have a nice attack, but if you can't keep clean sheets in the Premier League, you're asking your centre forwards or your strikers to be scoring 2-3 goals a game, and that is what they're having to do at the moment. You look at them against Leicester as well, you look at the goalkeeper, you look at the back four, it isn't good enough, and that's the problem he's going to have. You can have a good attack, you can play the so called rock and roll football or heavy metal football that he was talking about, but sometimes you look at that defence, it's dinner jazz,
you know. It is poor. Interesting. Okay, it's been quite split. I asked a lot of people that question. They were quite split between Klopp and Pochettino. Okay, let's get into the podcast because we've got a lot to get through in this show. We're going to get to the FA. We're going to talk about the FA in a little bit. But before we get to the FA, I want to just talk very briefly about the League Cup and how we can make the League Cup relevant again and how we can make it a worthwhile competition. I'll start with you, Troy. I was at the Arsenal Doncaster game on Wednesday?
Yeah.
It was Wednesday.
Yeah.
First of all, it was one of the worst Arsenal performances I've ever seen. It was really bad. But I was also sat there thinking to myself at points, I don't give a damn about this competition. I don't care. I really don't care about this competition. I want to win it because we're in it. But if we got knocked out,
wouldn't mean anything.
If they cancelled it tomorrow and said no more, I wouldn't really care anymore. How do we make, or how can the competition be made relevant and worthwhile again, if at all?
Stop having draws at 4:15 in the morning would be a start. Mm-hmm. it's almost like it's one of those that you can do without now. You can almost get rid of it. I think they've played with it far too often. And it only kind of adds value when it reaches almost a semi-final stage. And I think if that's the case, then that's not a competition of any value. So, you know, the EFL, after obviously they've got this new sponsorship deal, and whatever that brings, it brings money into them, but it's not capturing the imagination of the fans. You know, so you was at Arsenal, and I'm quite sure that most of the games, I would say that their attendances were down.
Well, actually, to be fair, Arsenal, I think we had 40,000 still there.
Yeah, but
there.
You lie about your attendance.
No, there were lots of gaps, but I think we did have about 35,000, 40,000 there, 40,000. Albeit at reduced ticket prices.
Right, okay. Well, then maybe that's the things we need to, you know, are clubs doing the same thing? Are they reducing the prices? Should it be a competition where, you know, they have to play a certain amount of the young players, but then will fans come out and watch that? And will those players then get dumped when it reaches the important stage of the semi-finals? Mm-hmm. I think it's like where football needs to look at it collectively and decide on where they want to and stick with what they're going to do. Because at the moment, we seem to how many names has this cup had? Mm-hmm. And I can't even name it what it is anymore.
Carrier bag, whatever it's called.
There you go, carrier bag cup. So, you know, we need to decide what we're going to call it. And I know it all breaches on sponsorship and whatever else, but for me, it's going downhill, you know, to a stage where I don't think people are interested in watching it on our television screen. Mm. So, you know, football has to decide what it's going to do. Do we? To be fair, I'm at a loggerhead. You've caught me on the hop on that one. I'm a little bit of a loggerhead as where to go with it, to be totally honest.
Well, Warren, do you see any value in this competition?
I think you have to be fair, because any cup needs a sponsor. The FA Cup sponsored by the Emirates, the FA Cup sponsored by Eon, the FA Cup sponsored by adding another sponsor. I think clubs have to take a responsibility with this as well, because they're the ones who, at the start of the season, know that there is a Premier League to challenge for. There's Champions League places to challenge for. There's an FA Cup and there's a League Cup. They know what's in front of them. But fans take their lead from managers and clubs. And if there are Premier League clubs who don't care about the League Cup, there are teams in the Championship who don't seem to care about it. Nigel Clough made 7 or 8 changes for his team to go to Old Trafford. If I'm a player at Burton and I've worked my socks off to A, get into the Championship, and B, earn the right to go to Manchester United, I'd be going in that change room and killing him if he's rotating me. I want to play at Old Trafford. That's the point of this tournament as well. It's teams like Burton getting a chance to go to Old Trafford, Doncaster to go to the Emirates as well. And as I said, fans take their lead from clubs. If the clubs don't care about the tournament, why should the fans care about the tournament? Mm. If clubs don't pick their strongest team or say to their fans, we're going to win this tournament, why should they turn up? Mm. Go to the League Cup final last season as well. Manchester United versus Southampton. That was an excellent game of football. Mm-hmm. Because Southampton made it into a good game. Their fans turned up. United fans turned up.
But that's a final though. Finals generally are going to
be... Yeah, but I'll take your point when you talk about... rounds, we get tournaments at the start of the tournament. That's the Champions League to a certain extent as well. Who cares about the group stage in the Champions League? We talk about the business end of the Champions League when it's at the knockout stages. So the same thing applies to any other cup as well.
Mm. Okay. I was thinking today about who actually benefits from this competition, because as Warren was saying, the big clubs just kind of buoy it off. Yeah. You've got even the smaller clubs now rotating and buoying up because they want to try and stay in the league or get promoted out of their league. Yeah. The only thing I could think of in terms of who benefits from this are kids and families. So I don't know about Chelsea, your club, but at Arsenal, they do this really good rate, which allows kids and families to come. And where I was sat, there were lots of people that were there that clearly wouldn't have been there for a Saturday game.
Yeah.
Can you think of anybody else that really benefits from this competition being in existence?
Yeah, you made a good point about the kids and family. I was there for the game at Nottingham Forest on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Tuesday,
and I was only there because I got free tickets.
Same. Same.
So yeah, you do see a lot of more kids, which is nice, because a lot of kids, and I think going on from kids, you'd hope that some of the younger players in squads would benefit from it as well.
But on that point, sorry to cut you there, on that point of young players getting a play, at your club, for example, Masunda played, didn't he?
Played really well as well.
But if you get knocked out in the next round, how many more games are you going to get this season?
You'll get
How many games? Yeah, Chelsea will he get this season?
Masonda is relying on that competition for games. And I think when I was watching the draw on the way back home, and when we got Everton, I thought,
he might not play.
He's not going to play now.
Yeah,
we're going to play a team that can play against.
So, do young people, unless you get to the final, really benefit from that competition?
I tend to disagree because I think both teams will probably approach it in the manner that they'll still play a weakened team. I don't think people take really take onus of the competition until they've reached that final stage where there is a final at stake. Mm. You know, you're in a two. Is it still two-legged semi-final? So you're in a two-legged semi-final.
Yeah.
So you've got an opportunity to go and play in the final. You want to go to Wembley. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's when they take it serious. I still think that in the next round, you'll see clubs putting out squads that are teams that are probably a bit half and half, regardless of if they're playing a Premier League club or not.
That's true, but still not to the extent that I'd think. I think Masonda sits out. Mm. I think it's the rotational wingers that comes in. I think it's
so Pedro might come in, Hazard goes out.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's the it could be if we get a lower league team, then you get the real like 16, 17 year old coming in, possibly making his debut, etc. Mm. Which I don't think you're gonna get now. We've got Everton in.
This all feeds into football clubs and managers, sports scientists, medical staff telling players that they need to be rested all the time, they need to be rotated, they're tired, and that's the problem with this as well. You've got Premier League clubs, Championship clubs hoarding players, squads are too big. You ask any player, what would you rather be doing? Sit in the stand watching a game, training or playing? Footballers want to play football. And like I said, this lead is taken by fans from clubs. You mentioned kids going to great games and paying a discounted price. Why would they want to? If they want to go watch a reserve game, they go and watch Arsenal's reserves at Boreham Wood. They go to the Emirates to watch Arsenal's first team play. Mm. So why would Arsene Wenger want to rotate? I understand giving the younger players a game, but you have to incorporate the younger players with a strong spine of top class first team players. That's the only way they're going to improve.
Mm. You mentioned earlier on about maybe reducing the age. I was trying to think of some ways, again, I was struggling in order to reinvigorate the competition. Things like, would you make it British players only? Under 25s only?
Would never happen.
That's restricted trade.
Yeah, it would never happen.
We're still in the EU.
It would never happen. I think what you've got to struggle with, to be fair, and I hate to say this, but Warren's got a point in terms of where clubs take their lead from. So if you know that your manager is not taking the competition seriously, you've got no right to have a go at the fans for not turning up. Mm. But what is taking the competition seriously? You know, teams name a 25-man squad, because 25-man should be good enough to go and play in that first team. Mm. So for me, straight away, you utilise your 25-man squad. Mm. And then you utilise the youngsters who could be a part of that squad because, you know, they're of the age that they can be. I think sometimes they're very critical because everyone wants to see the 1-11, 1-11, 1-11. 25-man squad is there for a reason.
And I think getting any competition better, you look at what's happened in China. You put money behind the competition.
Bringing China people into play here.
Yeah. You look what happened in China. If you put money into competition, players will go there. People will play. I'm not saying the Chinese competition is fantastic, but it's improved a lot
from
what it was. I think if you put good prize money,
it has to improve because the man there are getting money to improve it.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're not going to stop.
Saying is, if we come up with these fanciful ideas, I think in England money talks. If you can put money behind a competition, maybe put a European spot, if not Champions League, maybe the Europa League spot behind it, something that elevates.
But they're already.
The winners are normally teams that are going to be in Europe anyway.
Yeah, because they're the ones obviously probably with the bigger squads, or the ones at some point, because at the end of the day, it's a trophy.
It's
a trophy at the end of the day. You're a Chelsea fan, and what was the first trophy Jose Mourinho won?
It's the League Cup, and I do have an affinity with it.
And it's a stepping stone.
Every year since then, it's devalued to the point where we're now discussing it now about its value. Do you know what I mean? And to be honest with you, the League Cup, you know, it used to be the first cup you could win, so it always had that value.
Yeah.
And then it took you on. You know, the clubs always respected it, and always there were some great finals. But I just think now, with financially, with everything else that there is involved, people are like, "Oh, do you know what we could actually do without?" Because when I say financially, I don't mean financially in the League Cup. I mean, financially elsewhere.
Of course.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That adds another massive problem.
And just to kind of throwing a curveball here with the League Cup, is there an argument to get rid of it? Because for the English players, it's just another set of games that adds to the Premier League, European and FA Cup games that they already have, which feeds into the possible argument for many people that come tournament time, World Cups and Euros, they're knackered. They play too many games.
I wouldn't get rid of it. I always say this, like with the FA Cup as well. Why is it a problem that there's a competition that has less value than the others? Like, I get it's the fourth competition. It's clearly the fourth, but it always has been. Even at its pomp, it was always the fourth competition.
Well, we've all agreed that, or kind of agreed that. If it went tomorrow, the problem we've got, though,
Jordan, the problem we've got is there's always been an order of priority. But what's the game changer? There's been two game changers. The four places for the Champions League and the amount of money a team can earn by staying in the Premier League.
Or in any league.
Not the Premier League. Prem.
No, but also lower leagues as well, because there's money. There's clubs in the Championship that want to get relegated.
The team, if you finish bottom of the Premier League, you're still earning more than Bayern Munich.
I accept that. That's the point. What I'm saying is that in the Championship, there are teams that would rather not get relegated than risk going for the League Cup.
No, but
so I'm saying it's all the leagues. There's a financial clout staying in your league.
Not really. But what I'm saying is it's always been the League Cup, FA Cup, and the Premier League, and then obviously slipping in between the Premier League and the FA Cup, Champions League qualification. The gap between priority in terms of finance of the Premier League and the FA Cup is huge. That's going to have a knock-on effect in terms of the League Cup. There are certain teams who aren't that bothered about the FA Cup, let's be clear. So what chance has the League Cup got?
So would you rather just see it gone? Because people, but you think it's still got a place to play?
Of course it has. That's what I mean, you're missing my point. Because the fans of clubs take their lead from the club. The club isn't bothered. Like Troy said, why should the fans be bothered? If the club takes it seriously, then the fans will take it seriously. That is as simple as that. When clubs get to the last 16 or the quarterfinals, or if there's a good draw early on, you'll see those stadiums packed out.
Okay, all right. I think the comments from Jose, Pep and Poch about the League Cup last week kind of all for me stem that it's going to go soon, because they've kind of made it.
What say have they got over it, whether it goes or not?
Well, I think if the top managers in this country are all implicitly or unimplicitly saying this competition, we don't care about it.
But wasn't Jose doing Hamilton's when he won last year?
Saying you don't care about a tournament and a tournament being got rid of are two completely different things.
I see it as the prelude. If they're saying we don't really care about
it, it's a Football League's trophy. It's got nothing to do with the Premier League.
Yeah, but
they take part in it. It's the Football League competition.
But they're the ones that are bringing the glamour and bringing the prestige to the competition. If they start mugging it off, then it just becomes...
They've been mugging it off for years and they're still in it. They can't not take part in a tournament. Remember what happened to United in the FA Cup?
I accept that. What I'm saying is that the comments from these high-profile managers, for me,
let's see what they've got to say if they get to the semi-final and the final.
I think the comments don't help. And again, if I'm a fan listening to my boss disrespect a competition that I've just gone and paid how much money to go and watch you go and win and then looking to buy a ticket in the next round, I then start to question why I'm doing it if the manager's not really taking it seriously. You know, so I think, and I know we wait on every word that a manager says. I think sometimes they need to take a little bit of a rap on the knuckles for saying that in-house because it doesn't send a great message. So I don't even know who Spurs are at home to next, because they seem to always be at home.
In the Cup.
West
Ham?
West Ham, yeah.
They can draw West Ham. Daniel Levy will be loving those comments, won't he?
Exactly.
Corporate half empty.
Yeah.
Wembley half empty. Daniel Levy will be loving that. Well, yeah, cheers. Cheers, Mopo.
Exactly. I mean, in Spurs' case, I think it's different. I don't even think they should be... Well, I don't think they should be playing at Wembley full stop. But definitely not to play, in this competition, playing at Wembley. Because...
the carrot?
Where's the sense in that? Yeah. You know, that is the ultimate dream is to go and every single player at the moment is buying a suit to go and play at Wembley because they're going to play at least once there this season. For me, that's another story. Sorry.
All right, let's move on now, guys. Let's get to the FA, and we're going to try and get through, or we're going to get through as much as possible with what's been happening over the last few weeks. Let me start with you, Gabriel.
Yeah,
I'll start with you, G. Are the FA just out and out incompetent, or is it just a refusal to change and improve?
I think there has been... I'm always
I'm always reserved in terms of criticism of organisations, because I guess I've worked in for public bodies before, and I know it's one of those things where you can get 9 things right, but the 10th thing that you did get wrong gets blown up, and then everyone gets the perception that you're incompetent. But the FA's rap sheet, it's just extending and growing and growing. I mean, even if I take out like the recent events, which I know we're going to talk about anyway, but if I look at Wembley Stadium that was built at the same time as the Emirates, and you look how smooth the Emirates building was and how bad it took and how long and extensions to Wembley and all that and how long that took, there's something in the FA which is not going quite right. And I know it's difficult because...
So basically you're avoiding the question, aren't you?
No. This is a general one, first of all, then we'll get to the detail.
But no, it's clearly not running well. I don't know how you fix it, because you can't get politics too much involved in it, because then FIFA get upset about that, and for obvious reasons. But something... You say change personnel. Every person that comes in, you know, from Palios, anyone who's in there, they just seem to fail to get things right. And I think a lot of the things which happened recently with Samson, there may be things that they've handled correctly, like in terms of getting rid of Samson. That, you know, people think overall, I think the perception is that's the right thing to do, but people just haven't got the faith now that the FA have done it for the right reasons or done the right things when they've done it. And I don't know how they're going to turn that perception around.
Okay, well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of what's currently happening at the FA. Martin Glenn, chief executive, I'm very big now on this thing of, if you're employing people and that person you employed you sack within a year, so this is general football management, but also with the whole De Boer thing at Crystal Palace, I'm very big now on, if you've employed that man and you're having to sack him so soon, you should also at least be considered your position as well.
I think, to be fair to Michael, I don't think he employed. He didn't. It wasn't on his watch.
He didn't. But there's a crossover of what he knew.
Yeah, Mark Sampson's employment was back in 2013. That was not on Martin Glenn's watch, and I'll give him that. Dan Ashworth was the man who employed Mark Sampson. Dan Ashworth was the man who sort of has kind of helped Mark Sampson climbed the greasy pole at St George's Park, for want of a better phrase. Dan Ashworth is the man who has made sure that Mark Sampson has stayed there and progressed there. And ultimately, Dan Ashworth is the man who looks to be protecting Mark Sampson from what has been going on at the FA. But that protection has only lasted so much, and for a certain amount of times, when it looked like Dan Ashworth all of a sudden is going to be in the firing line. So there's a bus coming at the moment, and then quick shove and someone else goes under that bus. A little bit of self-preservation kicks in for Dan Ashworth. And for me, and I'm sure we'll get onto it at some point, he is the man with all the serious questions to answer as far as Mark Sampson's employment, his progression with the FA is concerned as well, and how he has been protected, and the investigation into what happened with his alleged racial comments towards Eni Aluko and other players in that England women's team.
So first of all, Troy, do you think that Mark Sampson was rightly sacked?
Let me tell you about what it looks like from the outside. It looks like that they've taken this to devalue the other pitcher being Eni Aluko. At the moment, I don't think that people on the outside trust what's going on the inside. Mm. I think the messages that are coming from the inside add value to people's distrust. And I think until we actually get to the point of that parliamentary committee, where I think most of this will be laid out on the table, and you cannot wash over your answers, then I think all we're going to keep doing is speculating. Mm. Some of the interviews that have been conducted have been poor from my point of view. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've kind of added any value to people's knowledge at all. I think the public have been treated disrespectfully, and I think we're now at a stage where people want answers. And I don't think that you should disrespect the fact that people want answers. Mm. Now, the governing body of the game Let's just remember that, the governing body of the game. So what messages are being sent out at the moment? And they're not good ones.
The scrutiny, you mentioned Dan Ashworth there earlier, Warren, that he's now going to be under. Do you think that the problem starts and lies with him, because ultimately this is on his watch, or do you think this is a lot bigger than just him and this is about a culture of what's happening at the FA and how they deal with their affairs and how they deal with
there
problems?
Is a culture there, but let's look at this incident. Dan Ashworth was the man who gave him the job. His first real job of any significance was managing Bristol Academy, which is now Bristol City Women. And we know what happened. There was this check into his background and there was inappropriate behaviour with a member of the Bristol Academy squad. That was before Dan Ashworth hired him. The FA put Mark Sampson on a course to spell out how he has to have a relationship with other members of a football team. Let's just go through some of the words the FA used. Safeguarding. Okay? This is an England manager, Jordan. We're talking about a safeguarding report. We're talking about an England manager of a senior team. We're talking about him being not a risk to people that he's going to be managing. FA, England senior manager, not a risk. Safeguarding. Are those the words we should be using when we are talking about a man who is in charge of a senior football team? We've just had historic sexual conduct cases, sexual abuse cases of young kids in football in England, up and down the country. And within 2 years, we're having a conversation about an England manager and we're talking about safeguarding, and we're deciphering if this guy is or isn't a risk to the players he's managing. How does that look?
So what I want to know, and I'll stick with you, Warren, what I want to know is why, if they, and the record of what happened previous to his employment at the FA was there to see, the record was there, why did they still persist to give him the job? Is that incompetence, they didn't do their due diligence, or was there another reason why they thought this guy was the right
guy? Let's go back to the next stage of this, right, where when Martin Glenn came in and there was a report somewhere about his conduct when he was checked out. Now, Martin Glenn must be the world record speed reader, as far as I'm concerned, because apparently he glossed over this report. And all of a sudden, we fast forward to 2017, he decides to actually read it properly and sees there are glaring issues in that report which need addressing. Why weren't they dealt with then? Why weren't he, Dan Ashworth, and the head of HR, who dealt with this at the time, why didn't they look at that report and see the same things that are in that report now that were there then? Those are the questions that we need to ask. Those are the questions that Dan Ashworth needs to answer when he goes in front of the parliamentary committee at some point this week.
But it wasn't the statement from the FA when they made the second that there was new evidence that came to light that wasn't available at the time of the appointment?
They were told anonymously to go back and look at the same report they couldn't be bothered to read 2 years earlier. That's the problem.
That's incompetence.
The new evidence is in relation to the Aluku case.
Okay.
Not in relation to the safeguarding case. Yeah.
And all of this cheapens any Aluko's case as far as I'm concerned. It absolutely cheapens what she has gone through over the last couple of years to actually go through the right and proper legal process to actually raise her concerns and raise her legitimate issues in her mind of what has been going on in that England senior women's team. It cheapens it. All they can do is look back and think, well, hang on a minute, we don't like that, you're gone. So what we're saying here is, what they perceive or what they've said are inappropriate relationships, as far as Mark Sampson's concerned, with players at Bristol City Academy at the time, supersede the complaints that Eni Aluko has made to him. Legitimate complaints. Let's be clear. This is a qualified lawyer we're talking about here. not just some girl who's been dragged off the streets. This is a professional woman, a professional athlete, and a professional woman in the corporate world who has come to the FA with a page by page account of what has happened. This isn't just something she sent in some email or off the back of some postage stamp. This is a detailed report of what's gone on. And for them to not even bother to speak to the people who were allegedly involved, who he is allegedly insulted.
Well, that's the worst thing for me, Warren, the fact that the relevant people that needed to be spoken to were just blatantly not spoken to. Did you not find that bit?
To be honest, there's been one investigation. It's been a second investigation.
Yeah.
And now there's going to be a third investigation.
But Troy, with all due respect, no. They weren't investigations. They were Operation Clear Mark Samson's. That's what they were.
You have to let me finish because I was actually going to say that. But the third investigation now obviously will include a lot of the people who should have been spoken to at the
original. And do you agree with Warren, as I do, that this does cheapen any Luco situation?
Well, of course
because
it does, ultimately, because they've taken the option of bringing up something that was probably known around football back in 2013. Mm. So they've done that. So now the story around the Luku now drops down a peg. You know, so it's not as in, so all of a sudden now they're still back in the process that they've taken around the Luku. So whilst endorsing that they've done the right thing on the previous case. Mm. So my question is, you know, are you gonna endorse the fact that you've done things wrong years down the line with a Luku?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we going to put this story to bed now? The fact that you've removed the biggest individual involved in this case, other than any, you've now removed them out of the picture, which says to me that, you know, actually that should still be ongoing with the man in charge, for me personally.
But Troy, they've got a problem because in some ways the FA have backed themselves into a corner here because... And in some ways, any snookers, because the problem they've got, if the third investigation into any of Luco's allegations doesn't find Mark Sampson to have done it, to do something wrong, if they clear him for a third time, Mark Sampson will probably have a case for wrongful dismissal. Because at the... Oh, hang on, let me finish. Yeah. Because the problem they've got is that everything that they sacked him for, they knew about when they hired him. So Mark Sampson will think, well, hang on a minute. I've been cleared of any wrongdoing as far as any Luco and the other girls are concerned.
I've lost my job.
What because of things that they already knew
well,
about.
I was to ask you, Gabriel, next, because I know you know a little bit about this sort of thing. Yeah. Do you think he does or could have a case for wrongful dismissal?
Well, that's why I asked the question before about whether it was new information. Because you can reopen a case if you've got new information that wasn't presented to you at the time that will be so significant that it could change the outcome of the case. You can't then try someone for something that you already knew. Mm. And if the FA are going down that road, then they're pretty silly. But what I would say is for the what you get for wrongful dismissal nowadays in the court in the UK is not a lot. So you're looking at about 80 grand. So I think... so
not,
if you're
not a lot to who?
Well, maybe not. Not a lot to someone working in football. Oh, not a lot to the FA.
Yeah.
So if you think about it from the FA, if I'm thinking like the FA, if you think strategically, you could say, sack him. I'll give you 100 grand, and just as not to go to court, and then it all goes away, and that goes with a settlement agreement. And then nothing.
I'd say forget the money. I think the FA have to make this stick because it will be an indelible stain. It will be an indelible stain on their reputation, and I just don't think they come back after this.
But you put yourself in their shoes. Isn't it easier for them for it to go away than to blow up and everything comes out?
Do you think for them, just pay your money off, 100 grand is nothing?
This is not me saying...
If I'm thinking a kind of business mind,
damage limitation, then that's what you do.
I don't think damage limitation comes into this.
No. I think it's gone past that now.
Damage is done.
The
football world is on this like there's no tomorrow. I have to also say that if this was in the men's game, how massive a story would this be? And how and there's great focus on it at the moment, because to be fair, there's been some journalists who have not let it go, and all credit to them for keeping it in the public domain when others would probably want it to be washed away. If it was in the Mouse game, would there be more of a focus? Would there be more of heads have got a role? You know, you look at Sam Allardyce. Sam Allardyce went just like that. Just like that.
He went in a day.
Yeah. That's what I mean. He went just like that. Gone. How many questions asked? No. What do we need to pay? Bam, gone.
What now for Eni Luko? Because where does this leave her, Warren? Because I think she's in a really horrible position whereby they've almost, they being the FA, have dragged the women's team into this with that whole, they've almost divide and rule. Do you think that she can go to that dressing room now and really, it really be cool?
The FA haven't divided and ruled. The players have divided and ruled themselves. The players have decided which side they're on. You look at Nikita Parry.
Do you think that was not from the FA? Do you think that that was off their own back?
Not at all, no.
So who coordinated that sign of solidarity?
You'd have to... Listen, if a player decides to run over to a man who within a day is going to be sacked from his job to show his support, that's her choice. That's... Who's the captain of the team?
Steph Houghton.
Steph Houghton. It's her team. She's the captain. She's the leader. She has to take some responsibility in that respect as well. Because don't tell me that that wasn't, that there has been, during that camp, before that game, there hasn't been some sort of rallying of support for Mark Sampson. You telling me that there wasn't one conversation during that camp where somebody, whether they're a junior player in terms of the hierarchy of the camp or a senior player, where they have said, let's get behind our manager, let's show him that we back him. That was a public display.
That's what football's like, isn't it?
It was a public display of support for their manager and a public display of disrespect for a girl who basically has stood up for herself and said, enough is enough, I am going to take you on. That's what that was. Was their Luis Suarez t-shirt moment.
And as I've heard, that was Nikita Paris's, that was her Glenn Johnson moment. You know what I mean? Do you think she can return back to that team? Bearing in mind what happened. And
It's up to any. First of all, whoever the new manager is, she has to be playing well and impressing them and keep playing well and keep scoring goals. Does she want to be in part of that squad? Mm. That is a question for any, because she will have watched players openly, publicly go against her. That's a question she has to ask for herself. Does she want to be part of that? That's up to her.
Gabriel, would you be uncomfortable if the next manager was black?
I
hope you know what I'm trying to ask you.
I know what you mean, and I think the answer is clear for me. I'd only be uncomfortable if I felt it was a token appointment. It was an appointment to appease the masses, and it was an appointment to kind of help to brush things under the
carpet. If the appointment was a black person, do you think that that's what it would be?
The cynic in me would make me think that that would be the case. If I'm going to be honest, think that they'd probably try to find a black woman to be in the team, who then would try to bring any back as captain again.
Okay. Where are you going with that? We have two black managers out of 92 in the male professional game.
Okay, this is why I ask. Gabriel. I think he knows why I'm asking this, for the reasons that he's displayed. If the manager was appointed was a black man or black woman.
Which one?
Anybody. I don't know. If Paul Lynn's got the job.
There isn't any.
If Paul Lynn's, just as a name, if Paul Lynn's got the job, would you be uncomfortable as a black man? I think it's important to let everyone know that's listening, there's four black men here.
That's hypothetical
Paul Lynn's could get that job.
Why could he?
Well, because he's a manager, he's out of work.
There would be the biggest uproar if he did get that job.
Why in your view?
Where does he align to the women's game?
Okay, well, let's say a black woman's coach got the job as
where
a black man.
Where are they?
There's no black woman female
where
coach.
Where are they?
No, I'm asking.
Not get the job back again. She's at Brighton. She's not going to get
the
job back.
So she's the only black female coach in
they?
Football.
Where are they? I don't see them.
Okay,
I don't see them now. So the what you're asking for you, what the question you should be asking is, what if another male gets that job? What if another male gets that job? Because at the moment, you know, there's all this hoo-ha about women and working in football and whatever else. Hold on, there's no women managing in the WSL. Emma Hayes, you take away Emma Hayes and a couple, it's male dominated again. So that must automatically say to you that a male getting the job should be top of the list, no?
I spoke to
if Emma doesn't want it.
There's a couple of people I know quite well in who have worked in women's football, and Emma Hayes is a name that's come up all the time. And there's another lady as well who's working in over in America who
who's got a really
I forgot her name with I apologize.
Well, Marianne Spacey as well, who was number two to Mark Sampson.
Yeah.
I think she's taken charge, I think, temporarily, but
she's a part of the development squad. She got moved down the list for some reason or another, that face, Warren. Do you know what I mean? So she's been removed from, you know, being an ex-player of credibility who was working. You know, I don't see Marianne getting any credit. Mm. Her credit's all gone to the number one, but, you know, all of a sudden she's been removed. Mm-hmm. Would she want the job? You know, so...
So are we saying that the FA almost snookered themselves because the next person they have to employ has to be a woman? Because otherwise, if it's a man, it's going to look bad. If it's a black person, it's going to...
But why would it look bad if it was a man?
Well, I think for the reason that Troy has outlined. I mean, on the back of Mark Sampson, I think a lot of the women in the women's game are frustrated if it's going to be a man,
it matters to know his boundaries. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like any other coach managing any other team, you respect boundaries. It's as simple as that, Jordan.
But with the FA,
it shouldn't have to be an issue. Whether it's
it shouldn't, but the FA are toothless and they're spineless. So they might think. I'm thinking how they're thinking.
So what we're going to do? Give it to a gay man or something because they're managing women. Well, it's ridiculous. It's the sort of thing
I wouldn't put past the FA. That's my point. So I'm saying, what can the FA do in terms of the next appointment?
Hire the best person.
But they never do. That's the point.
Warren, let's be honest. We live in a world where the best person.
They never do. That's my point.
And I'm not just talking about in that industry.
I was being facetious.
Yeah, of course. You was. Long for that day. Best person gets the job, no matter what background.
And just to wrap up, guys. Just what next? What do the FA need to know? There's a parliamentary committee coming up. What needs to come out of that? I mean, I know I get the.
How many of these things have we had?
So you how think, many times you have just, the FA been up? A payoff, many, a few seconds, no, and we'll move on. What?
How many times needs to be transparent?
I understand football that, but we've been here before.
No, we have been here, and I'm trying not to go back there again because we have. If we sat in one, we've sat in how many? Do you know what I mean? If we've asked questions of one, we've got football. You know, and I'm saying something that will never happen. Football needs to be transparent. You know, let's stop the bullshit. Let's stop all the. We'll give them this much, but we won't tell them the whole story. Let's have everything set out on the table. Because now football has to gain the trust of people again. And football hasn't got the trust. Football, you know, every time something goes wrong in the game, you know, there's stories, there's this, there's that and the other. At the moment, let's be serious. If you was to take this microphone and walk around the streets and ask everyone, football at this present stage, I guarantee you get a negative response. Mm-hmm. Guarantee.
And I guarantee you, once though, whoever all the protagonists involved in this, the Dan Ashworths, Martin Glenn, and whoever will be called by the FA, I guarantee you from the moment they knew they were being called up in front of that parliamentary committee, they are up in some closed room being PR'd to the hilt. Questions answered. Self-preservation, you name it, that's what will be going on.
They bogged it up last week with the whole interview and article in The Guardian whereby they said that they wanted their barrister to be a black woman.
Yeah.
And in the counter, the lawyer...
They'll come up with an answer for that.
And also the PR, you said, hilarious. A couple of Mark Sampson's interviews were embarrassing. They weren't that good. where the avoidance to answer a straight question with... the technical terms was embarrassing.
Wasn't good.
This is the man whose brother tweeted that Leanne Sanderson and Ennio Luco were bad eggs. And
Anita Santa, yeah.
How would he know that? How would he know that? Is he a coach?
Yeah.
Or does his brother just so happen to be the manager of those three girls?
And just finally, I think another own goal the FA made as well with various interviews they've made last week was when they said that Mark Sampson wasn't up to the standards or wasn't fit enough to work within their organisation, but yet he's called to work within football in this country. Did you not find that a little bit of an own goal?
Because they want him out.
Of course.
Exactly.
Then leave it at that then, but don't then say he's not good enough for the FA, but he can work in football in England. Did you not find that a bit weird and a bit contradictory almost?
Not a bit weird, not a bit contradictory. Very a lot weird, weird and yeah. a lot contradictory.
It sums up the FA. It does.
It sums up the FA. We can't get him on that. He's got to go. Let's get him on that. That's what's happened here.
Well, I think, as you all three have said, there's a lot of speculation, I think, until the parliamentary committee has kind of come and gone. and we get some more facts, I think then we'll be able to kind of revisit this and come back to what is actually going on and who should go and what's what. Let's talk some football now, guys.
Yay!
let's talk about one of the games of the weekend. I want to very briefly.
Is it Crystal Palace?
No.
Oh, brilliant.
You're right. Chelsea Stoke, we can talk about that.
No. Let's talk about briefly West Ham Spurs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All
right. Just briefly. It was our key game on last week, over the last week on our social media feed.
What was that key game then? What is West Ham Spurs a key game?
Well, you know, the Battle of the Homeless, London Derby. both teams needing the points. Warren.
It's the one game he saw.
Yeah. That's all games, actually. Your information. Warren, Serge Aurier, is he a possible liability or is he still just finding his feet
in the
Premier
League? Nonsense. Lazy nonsense. He's a
top... No, it's not lazy.
No. I sat there at the end of the game and listened to some of the rubbish on social media.
Like what?
Some of the rubbish. He's a liability. He needs to sort himself out. He's one of... Trust me. He is twice the player Carl Walker could ever dream to be in his wildest dreams. This kid is top draw for half the price. Spurs have got an absolute bargain with this guy. He's a brilliant right back. You name me a defender who hasn't made a bad tackle or a daft tackle on a yellow card.
No, that's a redundant question because they've all made
that's
bad
the point.
No, but it's so not
why,
the point.
So why was he why, being, so why was asking, he treated in any different way over the weekend?
Because it wasn't one bad tackle, it wasn't one bad pass. It was, I've watched him three times now, and going forward, he's amazing. But defensively, he's
because
a
he's a wing back. They play with three centre halves. Yeah, that's his job. His main job, yeah. If you are a wing back, your main job is to get forward because you've got three centre backs and you've got two centre midfielders to protect you.
I accept but I've seen him make really dodgy passes inside his own box under pressure.
Because he takes risks. And that's because he's one of those defenders who thinks he's a good footballer.
No, that's why I'm asking, is he a liability?
I don't think so. He'll be fine. I don't think so. He's a top draw defender. He'll get better and better and better for Spurs. I rate him really highly. Cool. I don't see what the problem is.
I think you've upset Warren.
I watched some of the points, and it wasn't us, you know.
To be fair, I think it was quite patronising as well.
This is the 24-year-old experience.
You know,
that makes it worse. Then surely,
you know, the footballing public, particularly those that don't go and watch the games, and actually get all their views from the views of others on social media.
Even the second booking wasn't a booking; it was just a foul.
It was an accumulation of a lot of fouls.
But he
had to go for that foul, Warren.
All right, but also his manager highlights the situation by saying, "If he was to step out of turn, I'll headbutt him." Now, again,
message
is that sending
I agree.
Out?
That's a good point.
You know, so
that's
that
a good
labels
point.
His own player straight away.
Because all of a sudden, there's this narrative of this long rap sheet, longer than two packs. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Okay, I don't want to do too much Spurs this week. I've done a lot of Spurs the last couple of weeks. Let's just give West Ham a little bit of a mention. Are West Ham in trouble this year? Because they're in my three to go down.
I think three to go down is probably. Yeah, I think that's a little harsh. Probably a little sensationalist, but I know you like that, George.
I think they're in trouble, but
I think it's gonna. I can't. Bilic is my next manager to go. To be honest, I think the arguments between him and the owners that have been kind of played out in the public as well. It's never looking good when a manager has to ask why his chairman is talking so much and actually say that to the media. So I think they're in big problems. I think you pointed out at the beginning of the season, Arnautovic. It's kind of one of those
shocking
signings.
No, it wasn't 50-50. It was a shocking signing for me.
They've got Chicharito, who will get them goals, and they keep
if he's supplied. That's
if
he's
supplied, and they keep on putting him out wide.
I don't understand
why in England we do this. Anytime someone is a little bit slight or has got a bit of pace, we just shove them out
on
wide.
The
you know what I mean? It makes absolutely no sense. And the worst thing about it is this assumption that him and Andy Carroll will be a good combination, but whenever they play together, they look bad as well.
because of
what you said, it's a 4-3-3 formation.
Doesn't
I think
work.
Bilic is in trouble. Let's be clear. And when you have a owner or chairman like David Sullivan, who has a huge say in the recruitment of players. And when you have a manager saying that Andy Carroll and Chicharito can't play together, that suggests to me that... Now, the question you ask yourself is, who signed Javier Hernandez? Who signed Marko Arnautović? And who signed one or two other players that have come in there as well? And just if that...
Serious Hernandez, great signing, no, for the price.
I'm not arguing him per se as a bad signing, but...
Was it part of a wider plan or just like is to, it to
part,
appease?
Is it part of what the club wanted? Is it part of what the owners wanted? Or was he the player that Slaven Bilic said, listen, we had a poor season last season, get him.
I know for a fact Bilic has turned down players that have been presented to him by the board. I know for that for a fact. So there must have been an element of, yes, he'll do for me. Must have been. Because he has turned down players who has been presented, while you're smiling, presented to him more than one, by the way. So take half of that smile off of your face. So I know for a fact it must have been. Or is he making a statement by, you know, saying, well, you know, Hernandez can just go and play out there because he's
the way that they seem to be not singing from the same hymn sheet suggests more than suggests to me he's under pressure.
I don't think he'll go.
And it, to
you
me,
don't think he'll go.
I don't know.
I think he'll be gone by Christmas.
Oh, I'd be surprised if he's actually.
Do you guys think that the little bit of a rally towards the end might be the only thing that's kept him the job? I wouldn't be surprised.
Rally? What rally?
Well, the rally that get the scoreline.
End of the game on a high.
Yeah.
Oh, well. It's easy when you're 3-0 down and you're down to 10 men, you nick a couple of goals.
I agree, but then
football's littered with that.
People like really cling on to that. Like, yeah, next week we're going to win 4-0.
We finished the game really well.
They've got a massive game next, Swansea at home.
Yeah, the biggest thing.
Then they go to Brighton. They need to stop. Yeah.
That would be the biggest thing. The fact they went 3-0 down. And to be fair, I only saw the highlights, but I saw Tottenham opening them up at will.
They
again.
Carved them apart.
I saw fight, no passion, no desire from a West Ham team who have done very, very well in that cup final that they played.
Mm.
So, you know, you would have thought you would have had at least a minimum.
I think one positive, sorry, Warren, come back to you one second.
I just want to just ask Troy, do you think West Ham are going to get Joe Hart kicked out of the England World Cup squad?
If you was asked me, I'm not quite sure Joe Hart should be in the squad at the moment since he went out to Torino. Okay. I think England should have picked a form goalkeeper.
Mm.
And, you know,
I'm talking squad.
Well, we're not blessed with goalkeepers, let's be honest. All right, you could go Butland, Forrester, Heaton, Hart. We're not, you know, that's four.
Pickford now.
Mm-hmm. Look at Everton, by the way. Right, okay, so yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look at Evan. So, listen, I probably would have had Jack Butland in from ages ago, but then Jack picked up an injury. Forster's been injured. Heaton's probably been the most consistent. He's now injured.
Mm.
All of a sudden, we're starting to dwindle again.
Okay, go on, Roger.
I think just to pick up on Joe Hart, I still think he's England's best goalkeeper. Not by a huge distance, by the way, but I think the issue is because Joe Hart is either having a bad time or perceived to be having a bad time, all of a sudden Jack Butland's stock goes higher. I don't think Jack Butland at the moment is doing it. I think he's got to grab that shirt off him, and I don't think he's doing that. He should get it by default.
When Joe Hart's in front of a Man City defence, people are talking him up, yeah? And he's not actually doing a lot of work. When he's in front of a West Ham defence, he can't save them single-handedly. So that's where the criticism is coming from. Do you know what I mean?
And there's all this stuff about he can't save them to his left-hand side.
It's just people picking points.
Of course, it's nonsense.
There's a lot of goals, to be fair, that have gone down to his left. There's a lot of goals, to be fair, that have gone down to his left.
How many?
Well, there's quite a
lot. You've been following the score on Twitter. It's nonsense. Get out of here, Jordan, with that.
Pickford's the next big thing, apparently. I'm just saying. He's picking the ball out the net on a quite regular occasion.
He is.
Four stuff. Southampton aren't doing.
I don't know what's happened to him. I was a massive fan of him.
Well, he came in and, to be fair, was not conceding. Southampton all of a sudden went from a team that was conceding goals to not conceding goals. And he was the common denominator. Mm. Now you look at them. Like I said, Heaton's injured. So all of a sudden, you have to think. Hold on.
Do you agree with Warren that although Hart is on the decline, no one has gone past him, been good enough to surpass him.
But also as well, because they've not been given an opportunity internationally. So we've had chances to go, do you know what, have a sit down, Joe, you know, it's not really...
Let's have a look at you.
Yeah. We've not, and we've not done it where we go 90 minutes. We've gone 45, there you go.
It's just one on business.
Give them 90 minutes in games that, come on now. I think we could play in goal in some of those games. Do you know what I mean?
But well, when you say you, that, but, how does that enhance them if you're saying that there's certain games that where any one of us could be in goal? That's not really going to enhance them, is it?
But because they've still got to have that mindset. They've still got to be on their toes. They've got to talk to defence. They've got to organise at court. You know, all little things like that come into play. Mm. And you can notice the dominance of a goalkeeper during periods. I mean, look at the... If we talk about Slovakia, boy, what a team they were. To be fair, I thought they came on there. I think they absolutely bossed England. Mm. I don't think people want to recognise how good they were. For me, if we've got a Butland or a Forster or a... Do you know what I mean? Mm. We really get
to find out really how good you are.
Honestly, I would play Butland or Pickford from now. Not because...
I ain't playing Pickford yet.
Not because they're better than Joe Hart. I think Joe Hart, as everyone's kind of agreed, is quite, I think, marginally better. But I think... Joe Hart is on the decline and he's not the future.
So we're going to put someone in.
But he's only 30
now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Give
Joe Hart's 30, he's not 55. No, he's still playing well, he's got another 5, 6, 7 years.
Not just in terms of his age, in terms of his...
Well, I think the point that G's making is that we're not talking about a spell of bad form. He's not been good for a couple of years.
Yeah, but he can come again.
Of course he can.
We just write people off when they have a bad spell.
He's 30 and, you know, goalkeepers... don't finish until they're 60-something.
No, but he looks like he's about to finish it.
But
hang on a minute. Let's just go back. A couple of years here as well, and look at the predicament that Joe Hart was in. Okay, one manager said he wasn't good enough because he didn't fancy him playing with his feet. Okay, so if you're out at Manchester City,
Pellegrini dropped him as well, and I think Mancini dropped him for a period as well. So he's been dropped by previous managers. It's not just Pep. Yeah, but he was getting dropped before Pep arrived. Let's have it right.
He got dropped for Willy Caballero.
Well, the reason that's whatever, but I'm just saying, making the point. I don't know many top goalkeepers that get dropped by three consecutive managers.
I don't agree with that. Anyway, the point is, right, Pep Guardiola from the offset, not for me, okay? So what options did he have at that point?
Pep or Joe?
Joe Hart. What options did he have to maintain his position as England's number one? He wasn't going to go to Manchester United. There was talk of Liverpool. My understanding was he fancied Liverpool, but that couldn't happen. There's nowhere else for him to go, is there? You look at all the top clubs in Europe, they all had a goalkeeper. So he's got to play football somewhere. And some ways, that predicament, I've actually felt sorry for Joe Hart because he was ostracised Pep Guardiola, Mr. Total Football, I walked it at Barcelona, I walked it at Bayern Munich. He wants a goalkeeper who's good at head tennis. That was all he was about. Look at the man he brought in. How did that go?
From what I hear, I don't think I don't think he pulled up trees at Torino either. The reviews in Torino.
Because they're a rubbish team.
Yeah, I think the point you're making was that he didn't have exactly a list of options to go to. So he had to go to Torino and try a thing. Yeah,
Liverpool would have been a good stop for him.
I don't know why that didn't happen.
I thought Liverpool would have been a good one. One, it would have kept him at the highest level in this country. Where, let's be serious,
Liverpool.
You know, the focus is going to be there, and I think we would have seen the true value, whether it was a value or whether he was a keeper on decline at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Yes, you could say again that defensively they're not the best, so he'll get a lot of work. But I think it would have been better than.
He's an upgrade on Mignolet.
What?
He's an upgrade on Mignolet.
Of course he is.
Any one of us in this room are an upgrade on Mignolet. Let's be clear.
So you're talking about us again, back being in goal again. Do you know what I mean? I agree with you, Warren. I actually feel for him a little bit because he's gone from, you know what I mean, to... And I think
a one man's opinion.
No, I take your point.
I don't think it's just on one man's opinion. I know George is trying to move on, but I think there has been a succession of managers and succession of poor performances which have led to this. I think before there were questions about him before Pep came in. I don't think it's just Pep. No. Personally, in my opinion.
But I do take your point that because Pep said it, all of a sudden we have to go with this.
He can't play with his feet. Oh. Okay.
Now let's move on.
He can't though.
let's move on.
That's how much it. Goalkeepers there to save shots.
I want to talk, guys, also about Romelu Lukaku. And obviously, we're aware of this football song that the United fans are chanting. And I found it quite interesting. what's happened subsequently and the reactions that have come because of this song. For those that don't know, not aware, there is a song that Man United fans sing and chant in support of Romelu Lukaku, and it involves, I won't repeat the song, but it involves reference to the size of his penis.
Was that Jude?
Genitals.
It's genitals, penis, whatever.
Yeah. Trying to be politically correct.
And it has been condemned by many. Many have said that the song is racist. Many have said that the song is offensive. Lukaku has come out on two occasions. First occasion he said we need to move on from this this situation, this story, and I think he came out today or yesterday where he was talking about how he doesn't like the song. Gee, I'll start with you. Does Lukaku need to do more to be more firm with the Man United fans in getting this song no longer sung?
I think he's in a difficult position because no one wants to turn on their fans. And effectively, I can imagine that, from what I understand, a lot of clubs actually control players' social media's accounts, especially in relation to things that they talk about, particularly in relation to a club, where you have to run tweets by, run tweets by the media. So I wouldn't put it all on Lukaku's head. I would say that I think as a club, Manchester United need to be a little bit more firm, and I think they could have acted a bit more quicker when the news first come. I think the implications of, I mean, first things first, I don't think in the intention was to be racist in any way in what the Man United fans did, but I think ultimately, once you understand the history of the connotations, to continue to sing it is very crass. I think Man United were a bit slow with it when they made that statement about, oh, we're going to take advice from our legal partners. And I think they should have came out straight away, hit the nail on the head, say, no, you shouldn't be singing this. And maybe with a joint statement with Lukaku, say, this is not what... But I think they've kind of almost left him out to dry a bit where he has to turn on the fans, which are effectively supporting him.
Well, because he's not actually come out and said to not sing the song. I think he said his first statement said, let's move on from this. And the second one was a bit... Was that today?
So he said it via his agent, Mino Raiola. Yeah.
Okay.
Via the person that does the social media.
There you go. Yeah. Warren, as a United fan, what's your view on the fans that are singing?
I never knew that. Do you know that? It's so impartial, Warren.
You wouldn't have guessed, would you? What's your view on A, the fans that are singing this song, and B, do you think that he needs to come out and be firmer with the fans if he doesn't like the song being sung?
I think the song itself...
First of all, do you see it as offensive?
Hang on. There are four black men in here, and we all know where these lazy racial stereotypes have come from. We didn't make them up. We didn't start them. Our fathers didn't start them. Our grandfathers didn't start them. And their parents didn't start them as well. We know where they've come from as well. So, it's a stereotype. If Romelu Lukaku finds it offensive, it's his choice. I reserve anybody's right to be offended by anything. My point then is you explain why it's offensive to you, whether you're, doesn't matter what workplace you're in, if someone says something and you find it offensive, you stop them and say, hey, I find that offensive, and you explain to them in a clear, concise and coherent way why it's offensive. Romelu Lukaku, was it 8 goals in 8 games? His stock couldn't be higher. The fans who made up the song come out with a statement last week and said, if Romelu Lukaku himself publicly says that he finds it offensive, we will stop. As I said, his stock couldn't be higher. So there would not be a better point for him to be as firm as he possibly can. Let's move on is ambiguous for me.
Yeah, of course it is.
It's a nothing statement. Romelu Lukaku, if he finds it offensive, which he clearly does, he would say to United fans, thank you for your fantastic support. You've welcomed me since I've come to the club. I'm doing my best. I'm doing my hardest for you. But please, just like Alvaro Morata said it and Chelsea said it, they were clear, they were firm, and they were precise. United and Lukaku should do exactly the same thing and say, this song stops now because I am offended.
So why do you think he hasn't? Do you think it's because of what G said, that he's maybe doesn't want to toe that line and piss off the fans? And
possibly, you know? but he's got to look at it in another way. His stock couldn't be higher at the moment. Now's the time
to say it. Right.
Yeah, because he can't stop scoring goals. Yeah. So this is the time for him to be on the front foot with the United fans, say, listen, I don't like this song. Mm. Other black people might not bother, it might not bother them. Because as I said, we can have the debate about whether it's a racist, whether it's a lazy stereotype.
Derogatory stereotype.
I'm seeing so many white people. I've never seen so many white people been so outraged on our behalf. What are you laughing at? Because it's true. I've never known so many white people to be outraged by a lazy racial stereotype than I have in the last 7 days. Did anybody ask Lukaku what his thoughts were?
Gee, I was going to ask you before you made the point, because I saw you leaning forward there to interject. First of all, have the Chelsea fans stopped singing the song with Alvaro Morata?
Effectively worked, and they've changed the lyrics to he comes from sunny Spain, he's better than Harry Kane.
I
think that's a bit of a stretch.
but that song has stopped.
Do you
agree that if Lukaku just came out and said, as Warren said, guys, you've been great, I'm loving my time here, I'm really enjoying it, I'm doing my best, but this song does offend me, can you please not sing it? That would have the same effect.
But I think in that case, the direction has come from the club. The club of it were clear straight away, as soon as the game was finished, that they thought that the chant was wrong. And Alvaro's statement came pretty much seconds after the club statement. Yeah. But I think Man United kind of leaving that open up in the open and like saying, oh well, we're going to take some advice and we're going to see what we're going to do, has kind of left everyone in limbo over the issue, which, and I think that is why it hasn't been addressed properly,
which gave the fans the opportunity to then go and sing it again this weekend.
Isn't there a new song now where they're saying, we'll sing what we want?
This is what Man United fans do all the time.
that's not just Man United fans. That any incident that involves a player where fans have been told do not, they'll then say, we'll sing what we want. I endorse all the points at the moment. Lukaku, through his agent, Warren's quite right, has come out and said he'd like this song to stop. They are talking more about the song than his football. That's his and my quote. Actually doesn't tell the fans that actually what they're singing is wrong, does it?
Yeah.
Again, so it's open to interpretation. It then gives the fans the opportunity to go, well, he didn't actually tell us off, did he? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so we'll sing it again next week. So, yeah, I think a big PR disaster. They should have... Warren said it right, and he couldn't say it more than enough. His stock is so powerful at the moment. If he says, you know, someone come here and tie my right boot, someone's going to tie his right boot. Mm. So why not come out and make a strong statement that puts an end to the whole shebang? And Chelsea have shown them the way by doing that.
Stick with you, Troy. Warren mentioned that there's been a lot of non-black people that have been also offended by this song. But conversely, I've heard a lot of white people a lot of non-black people that have said, well, it's a compliment. What's the big deal? It's not racist. It's a compliment.
How would they know?
Well, do you think that they don't understand why it's offensive? And that's a difficult question I get, because
people have not been educated.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a very simple answer. Mm. If you're not educated on the subject matter, you'll respond in the way you believe is right.
Yeah.
Full stop. No more, no less.
But even with that, and this is why I take some issue with the fans as well. Even if you're not educated, first thing, take responsibility to take. If someone tells you that something that it doesn't happen, but it should, Troy.
Yeah, it should. I understand that. But if everything that should happen does happen, we wouldn't be discussing this on our podcast.
You're right. So take the responsibility to educate yourself. But even if you don't, if someone has told you, even if one person says what you said is offensive, you know, don't be so defensive that you can't just. What's the harm of you not singing that song?
But hang on a minute. Nothing. We've been having this conversation for years. You say that, but by the same token, there'll be fans up and down the country cheering on black players. But once another black player from another team does something, you know what's going to come out of their mouth.
Yeah. I'm not singling out. This is not just single out just Man United fans in general. Although this particular issue is about Man United fans, but what I'm saying is that I personally don't know all of the history behind the Y word. So I don't know it stringently why it is it is 100% offensive to a Jew. I don't know all the history behind it.
Don't start.
No, no.
So, not to go into that one, but that is an even more complicated one, because for every Tottenham fan who's Jewish that says that it's actually offensive, you'll find another Tottenham fan who's Jewish who will say, actually, it's not offensive.
But the fact that 50% of them, or whatever the percentage is, say it is offensive, that's enough for me to stop
it. No, it's one.
If one Jewish person
is offended, it's offensive. It's as simple as that.
But just that, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But if another Jewish person says it's not offensive to Jewish people, what do you do then?
It's still offensive.
It's different if you've got every black person saying that's racist. You know, but if you've got 50-50, where do you go?
If we're in a room and someone is offended by comments, so if we're in here, there's four of us here, one person is offended by comments or banter or whatever you want to call
stop it.
You then stop it. Because that person then has the right to then rate, let's say that we were working for an organisation, has the right to take that higher. I was offended by what was said in this room, blah, 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 blah. So if one person in a ground says to Mr. Policeman or Mr. Steward, I'm offended by that, the clubs have an obligation to take that on board. They have an obligation, and it's not about 50-50, it's not about 70-50. One person is offended by comments, you know, and we all know the comments that are out and some of the comments that go underneath the flipping carpet at times. But you know, if we're going to do this, we have to do this right across the board, and we have to make sure that fans, yeah, we know they get behind their club and we know they're supporting their club, but can they not do it in another way that is not derogatory towards someone's gender, race, or you know, any kind of any one of the protected characteristics?
There's just so many songs also you could make up and sing about Lukaku. You don't really have to.
Of course there is, you know, but ultimately the raunchier or the nastier or the more crude they can be, the more the fans
get behind it and start
get behind it and get off on it.
But it's funny because this issue kind of highlighted the G-Sum Park song.
Yes.
And it's funny because I'd heard United fans sing that song but didn't realise what they were saying. That never got any type of coverage when that came out, to my knowledge anyway. I don't know, maybe
it did get coverage, and even the song chant, you know, Millwall Tottenham last season in the FA Cup, when they were singing about, you know, DVDs and stuff like that, and Kyle Walker had to tell him to shut up.
When I say coverage, I mean I didn't hear anything from United about the song.
Right, okay.
And I think,
but again,
so what are you saying?
Sorry to cut across. I get told off for that quite a lot lately. people talk about, we have to remember where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, yeah, things have happened in the past and it's gone, but we have to remember where we are now and how much we have to continue to challenge that kind of behaviour.
But I don't know, that wasn't that long ago.
Doesn't matter.
No, but it's ironic because I remember because United fans would sing about songs about John Terry being racist and then sing a song like that. Yeah. So it's not as if we've come, it's not as if we're talking 20 years ago when no one knew what things were.
Time has moved. So, you know, and I know what you're saying, but even back to 2013 and whatever, time has moved so quick where a certain law or something has changed, you know what I mean? So quick that if we don't update ourselves, then we'll be in trouble. Do you know what I mean? So I understand that. It wasn't a million years away, but it's still, we're now at this stage here. This is not a thing where we look back in history. This is a thing where we deal with this situation now.
Just finally, Warren, who's your next home game? Do you know your next home game is?
Crystal Palace.
Okay.
Then after the international break, Liverpool away.
Okay. That's actually quite relevant.
If
Lukaku hasn't spoken out and condemned this song in the next week or 2 weeks, and the song continues to be sung, A, what happens then? And B, if he does condemn it and they do continue to sing it, again, what would you think should happen then? Because ultimately, how do you police what fans are singing? It's hard to police, really.
Well, if there was a way of policing or dealing with what fans were saying, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
There is a way.
So I think there's a way. Yeah.
And as United have said, they will be studying video footage, they'll be studying X, they'll be studying Y. They can zoom in and get that. I'm not saying they'll get everybody, but from where the core may be, and they obviously know the core because there's footage of them anyway. So where the core may be, I'm telling you now, if they really wanted to, and with the stewards, who must know where that core is.
But also, you know who you sell your tickets to as well.
most tickets are done by membership schemes as well. You could tell exactly who's in that seat, unless people are selling on, which is it. But generally speaking, if people are going regularly, you know who's there.
So if Lukaku condemns it and they still sing it,
he's got a problem, hasn't he? he's got a big problem.
Let's be clear.
Let's move on now. Golden Boy. The list has come out, and there's a long list of players on this list for Golden Boy, which is for the obviously young best player in the world. The current holder is Renato Sanchez. I picked up.
It's going well for him, isn't it?
It's the curse.
He's just having one at Swansea.
It's the award you don't want to win, apparently. I picked up three or four of the leading contenders for this award: Mbappe, Rashford, Pulisic, Dembele, Jesus. Warren, start with you. Who of that, if we agree that those are the four front runners of the list, I mean, I also saw Kyle Walker-Peters on the list, so it's weird that you've got Mbappe on the list, so the same list as buddy Kyle Walker-Peters. But anyway,
what are the under 23 league one?
There were some weird players on that list, but anyway, who do you think? I don't know how much of European football you're across, but is any of those young players?
Pulisic is a good player. He's developed a good reputation in the Bundesliga. There's been quite a few clubs looking at him as well. I don't see. It's difficult because you kind of look at it from Rashford, Manchester United broke through. He's done everything that's been asked of him over two and a bit seasons, scoring goals, playing well. But Kylian Mbappe is a special, special footballer. He's 18, 19. He looks like he's been playing football for 10 years at the top level. He looks like a superstar in the making. He's got that much natural ability. He makes the game look so easy. And with all that skill, with all that talent, with all that poise, and all that athleticism, it's a lethal combination, and he's got a good head on his shoulders, and he scores goals. I think it has to be Mbappe.
You think he's a leading contender for that?
Absolutely.
Award, yeah. G, any who's the standout for you?
I can't really argue with anything this man's just said. I guess the only thing I would say is that I guess I've seen more of Rashford and Jesus, but then even got put if you look at it on paper, Mbappe has contributed more to the team, to the teams that he's played for me, than Rashford has, and made himself crucial and got his big move. Whereas I still think maybe like Rashford or Jesus have a bit more.
There's another year or two to go. Prove.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Mbappe for me. But Rashford done really well, and it's nice to see that we've got an English guy in the mix.
Is it close? I mean, Philip Neville came out and said last week that he put Rashford ahead, and I actually think Rashford's up there alongside.
I wouldn't argue against that.
Rate Rashford highly, and I take your points about.
I wouldn't argue Mbappe against Rashford. It isn't a slight at all.
No,
on Rashford.
But you just think the standout one is.
I just think Mbappe is a level above. That's all. I think the first game I saw him, within 30 seconds, I thought this guy's a superstar.
Mm.
He's that good.
Yeah,
born to play football.
Mm-hmm. Some of the previous winners is stellar list. Messi, Pogba, Balotelli, Van der Vaart, Isco, Guerrero, Rooney, Martial, Sterling on the list of previous winners. Who of the main four that I've listed at the top there?
Got to go with the lads.
You think Mbappe is the one?
You look at Monaco, Monaco were easy on the eye to everybody last season, weren't they? And he was pivotal to that as well. Do you know what I mean? I know they had a good crop of players, nearly all applying their trade somewhere else now, but he was pivotal towards that. And you look at him when he pulls on the blue of the national team, and he doesn't look any different. Mm. And obviously now, you look at him again and you think to yourself, as an 18-year-old doing the things that he's already doing, do you know what I mean? You got to give him some credit. And he's got massive amount of development to go, but he's playing in and amongst the right people as well, which I think will support and aid that development. He's one of those players, when you walk on the pitch, it excites you immediately. He hasn't even touched the ball yet.
Mm.
So he excites you, and you think to yourself, wow, I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to watch him. And there's not many like that.
No, there's not.
There's not many like that. So, yeah, he would be the standout for me. But again, agree with the guys. What do you take away from Rashford? You don't, because he's been phenomenal, and I think will continue to be for many years to come.
We're going to have a look at Jesus in the next couple of weeks a bit more in depth. But G mentioned that they're the two that we see every week because they're in our league. Who is ahead in their current development of those two, would you say?
I was disappointed because I wanted to see, I was at Man City for my sins on Saturday and would have loved to have seen him perform and see how he was in that game, but they didn't bring him on, they were saving him. I just think Marcus has got, you know, Jesus puts the ball in the back of the net. I would love to have seen what he's, you know, because I'm only seeing it on the TV, so I'm seeing what his general all-round play is like in terms of how he links the play up and how difficult he is to mark. Do you know what I mean? As a player, what's his movement like and what he contributes. And I watch Marcus and I think to myself, Marcus does it from the outside. You know, he looks like a terror from the outside. And then you play him down the middle and he gives you exactly the same. He's at the height of his confidence. He's taking free kicks now. All right, he hasn't put one in the back of the net yet, but that won't be far. He's taking free kicks. And he's looking like a player who, you know, and I must say this, people have to give a lot. People have a go at Jose Mourinho quite a bit over his development of young people. And I felt that he handled the Rashford situation very, very well last season. You know, playing second fiddle to someone like Ibrahimovic is not easy. But now he's showing the quality in terms of how he's now letting him explode. He's still biding his time a bit. Martial will come on and whatever. But I think it's to the benefit of Rashford. And I think Rashford appreciates that. And we'll see a better, continue to see a better player as he grows. You know, he's playing in I was going to say the most difficult league in the world. That would be debated. But, you know, he's playing in a league where defenders don't take no prisoners. And if, you know, and he's doing it, and he's doing it regularly, and he's now, you know, he's scored at international level as well. He's doing it in Europe as well now. Mm-hmm. Where else do you need to do it? Mm. You know, in the Carabao Cup. So, you know, he's doing it there as well. So, you know what I mean? I'd say Rashford probably just ahead, but would love to see Jesus at closer quarters to see what his all-round play is like.
All right. Just to wrap up, gentlemen, let's look forward just briefly to the big game of the weekend. Chelsea City. Got you here, Gabriel. United Palace, surely. Well, that could be another 9-0. Benteke's out for like 6 weeks.
I don't think it'd be a 9-0, but the problem Palace have got is the moment. Where's that next win coming from?
That is the problem. You got me and my brother here, so let's bring it out. You know what I'm saying? Say it again. Go on.
As I've said, what happened before with the previous manager, was it no wins in four? And Roy Hodgson has had a difficult start with the games. That's the problem, because if you lose at Manchester City, and if worst comes to worst, you lose at Manchester United. What's that?
It's only Chelsea after that. What's the
then problem? Chelsea, potentially. Is that six games?
That would be nine.
Nine games without a win.
Put it this way.
Could be cut adrift. That's what I fear.
If they lose those next three games,
that's what I fear, and that's feasible.
What do you mean they're gone?
They're gone.
No, listen, nine I'm in a room where I'm expecting some sympathy.
No sympathy here. If you lose nine games, first nine games, Troy, it's done. You're not making that back up. You're done.
Put it this way. They were much better on Saturday. I was quite surprised at the performance I saw. Now, it was only 45 minutes. Much 44. Better. 45. They were still good after they conceded the goal, which must give a lot of optimism. I don't think Benteke is as big a miss as what it probably should be if he was performing very well.
Who comes in now then?
Because they've got no striker.
Possibly me or you again, because there is no replacement.
Miss,
we need Wilf. I'm going to say it again. Not as big a miss with the way that he's playing at the moment.
No.
I think you have to be optimistic and look at the signs that they showed before. Do they get just a point at Old Trafford? Probably not. Probably not. Let's be serious. But I think, you know, I don't see, if I saw the teams running, so if I saw a team that was second from bottom now on 7 points, which is three games, I'd be going, shit, now we've got problems. At the moment, they're on 4 points. If Paris continue to lose the next two and then teams go 7 and 10 points, then I'd probably say, hold on a minute, now this is a journey. But because they're only on 4 points at the moment, and there's a batch of them, 4, 5, they're not, you know,
they're not pulling away.
They're not pulling away. They're not out of reach, when really, probably by now, you'd expect teams to have 6, maybe 7 points. So,
well, you're then asking, I take your point that no one has left Palace behind yet, but you're then, let's just say you lose your next two games, you're then asking Roy Hodgson to put together an insane run.
Well, it's not an insane run.
I understand where you're coming from, but it's, listen, the biggest thing was to lose your home games against Huddersfield, against Swansea and against Southampton, because I think they would have expected to have taken points somewhere from those games. You know, no disrespect in losing, no, lose to Man City, so what? So many teams are going to get battered up there. Losing away at Liverpool, so what? It's the way the games have come. I know they won there last year.
But I was going to say, Sam won those games last year.
Yeah, Sam won the Liverpool game. Sam got battered the same way at Man City.
Didn't he beat Chelsea?
Sam beat Chelsea. We haven't played Chelsea yet. Stop throwing it in there. Do you know what I mean? We go to Old Trafford. I don't... It is a bad situation, but out of a bad situation, you have to look at the positives. And you have to look at, with Wilf Zaha coming back, that they'll be a little bit more creative. Loftus-Cheek has been bloody good, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. He's been very good.
He surprised me. I didn't rate him.
I must admit, he surprised me a little bit, but he's been bloody good. And I think if Roy starts to sort out the defence, which I thought he did, again, it was only for 45 minutes, but again, it's no disrespect the way that Man City cut you open. And I think, you know, going to Pep a little bit, because City now play Chelsea on
the weekend. The game we're supposed to discuss.
City are frightening. City are frightening when they go forward. But it, again, for me, they're a very similar team to Liverpool, where you go and do it. Free reign in that final third. Suspect at the back.
I think Chelsea beat them. Are you going, Chelsea?
Yeah, I'm going.
You go to the game. Is that will be? I think we can agree. City's first big test. Yeah. That'll be their first big test. How
and maybe Chelsea's first big test as well.
Okay.
We played Arsenal, but maybe Chelsea.
Good one. I like it. You're confident of going to that game. You think you'll do well in that game?
I think it will be the contrast of styles, and I think we've got a really good chance. I really like to see us play Bakayoko and Kante and have the energy and have that power in the middle. I want to be controversial. Well, not controversial because I've said it for years, but I'm hoping that Rudiger replaces Cahill on the left side of the centre of defence, because I think he's been really good in the last few games.
I'll get ruined if he plays.
You think get ruined?
Yeah, I think I get ruined. I think Man City have got too much.
What?
I think it's too early for him.
I don't know, you know. I think the last couple of games he's been really good. I guess
who are they against?
Who
are they against?
Honestly, I look at City going forward, and I think it will be a risk to play him now. I watched him against Spurs.
I saw him against Burnley.
Right.
Frightening.
Okay. Right, Burnley. I watched him against Spurs.
God.
And I saw
he things, wasn't great against Arsenal in the right, Charity
so
Shield.
I saw things in Shield. Yeah, the Burnley game and against Spurs, where I think myself, he's not quite ready. So he needs to have a look. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Get some work and then come back into. That would be me. Yeah. I think Gary Cahill knows. I'm not saying he's great.
He's not such, great.
But you what know, I'm you saying, how can you be asking him to drop your captain?
Yeah. He knows the game.
He gets dropped all the time.
It's not a big deal.
Rooney, Kompany,
he knows the game. Saka. I think he'll be cute enough to be able to play that game in the way.
Top class experienced Premier League defender.
Wants to.
I don't know about top class. All right, maybe top class compared to what's out there now, but he's not a top class defender.
He's not a fan of Cahill. He's just not a fan of Cahill.
He just doesn't rate him.
I think he's one of the players that are kind of are protected by the media. I think he makes a lot of individual mistakes as well.
Protected by the media.
He is quite protected. His mistakes don't get highlighted.
Right. No Fabregas.
Unless the game's going badly.
Okay.
And hopefully Hazard back in as well.
Hazard will start. I think Hazard will start.
They've been kind of
ripped. Tiptoe.
For this game, yeah. Can I hear from Warren? I never thought I'd say that. how do you think it'll go?
I think it'll be tight. I think Kante will have a plan for Man City turning up, even though they're the home side. I think we know what Pep Guardiola's teams are like. It's just, you know, go and get on with it, go and enjoy yourselves, go and show the Premier League that my style of football is the style of football, and you will have to come and follow me. And come what may, even if we lose 4-3, we are a beautiful football team to watch. So I think Conte will have a plan. I think he'll look to exploit that. From a neutral point of view, I hope Eden Hazard starts. I think he's one of my favourite players. I think Bakayoko is really starting to show people what a top draw signing he is.
Yeah.
And what a bargain he is for £30 million. Now, when you look in the context of the last couple of transfer windows, that's a steal.
You know, I must admit, I thought selling Matic was a bad move, but I think
you made the mistake of comparing Bakayoko and Matic. Drinkwater is a replacement for Matic, because Bakayoko is a box to box midfield player, and anyone who saw him last season will know he gets around the pitch. He gets up, he gets forward, and he gets back. He's not a replacement for Matic. Drinkwater is a replacement for Matic. I think we have to be clear there.
Okay, I never saw Monaco last year, so I didn't see him beyond the Champions League games, but I was a bit,
I think you've seen enough in those games to know what he's about.
Those games he didn't impress me, I'm going to be honest. Boy, in the Champions League, he didn't impress me in the Champions League.
What game were you watching?
I didn't get the hype.
No, there was a lot of reviews that said that he was a really good athlete, but maybe not a footballer. Yeah. But from what I've seen, I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah. The games I saw him play, I thought he was excellent.
Going back and looking at Man City, I think they're big miss, and I think will be Mendy if he's not fit. Watched him on Saturday. One, he's a beast. Two, he plays very high up the pitch and he gives them that natural width that
his delivery is good
against,
as well.
Yeah, against the wing back could cause Chelsea problems, whereas they've not got anyone natural to go and play that size. So Danilo came on and didn't take anyone on and kept passing backwards. That could be a positive for Chelsea because, believe you me, that boy can play. He's a beast. Great ball in the box, great awareness with the people around him as well.
Doesn't mind a cross, does he?
Yeah.
Doesn't mind a cross. Yeah. You know.
And he's good.
And when he crosses it, he doesn't really waste it.
No, yeah. he puts quality crosses into great areas.
I think this will be Bakayoko's bigger test because I looked at the quality. De Bruyne drops deeper now and sparks things. Yeah. I mean, he zipped balls from left to right consistently, like I haven't seen people do that. Walker hugs the touchline, so again, Alonso will be told to play a little bit deeper now, and David Silva is David Silva. He prompts, he probes, he's amazing.
Final question: does this all mean absolutely? This means nothing for Manchester City if Kompany's not there. I know they've kept four clean sheets in a row now without Kompany. All these things that we're kind of highlighting for City, if he's not there to keep it together in a big game,
listen, I probably
does this
would
mean
still
nothing?
Worry if Kompany was there, but I worry for their defense because I don't see a leader. I don't see someone that will take control in a situation like that. I don't see anyone pointing people when push comes to shove, when they're under pressure. And against Palace exposed them a couple of times. And when I say exposed them, I mean Benteke's got a one-on-one that he's overrun. Loftus-Cheek
had a couple, didn't he?
Yeah, Loftus-Cheek has got in behind and scuffed one past. You won't get that against Chelsea. That will be in the back of your net. Do you know what I mean? So they need to tidy up. Personally, I'm going City 3-1.
I was just going to say, scoreline 3-1 City. Wow. Warren, give me a scoreline.
2-1 Chelsea.
G?
2-0 Chelsea.
I'm going 2-0 Chelsea as well, actually.
You see them fans who can never see beyond their own team? Like, them fans there.
Well, no, I happen to agree with him, so...
Yeah, I'm just saying, them fans that can never see... If it was the Etihad, he'd still say 2-0 Chelsea.
Nah, G's real, Kinda.
I'm going 3-1 City. I think it'll be a blinding game of football. I think it'll be a blinding game of football. I think it's all set up to be a really good game of football. 3-1 City.
I also want to get from the listeners predictions as well. So what we're doing as well, we're doing these videos from various fans of football teams for the big game of the weekend. So if you've got a video and you want to send us a 30-second clip of how you think the game's going to go and a scoreline prediction, tweet us at FFP_11. I'll tweet the guys' predictions as well, and we'll revisit it next week on the FFP. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Warren, G, Troy, Stars, as usual. Thank you very much, guys, for coming on the FFP. That's it. You're done. You can go home now. And don't forget to subscribe to the FFP on iTunes, Football Fans Podcast. Until next week, peace.